Once I built a mortgage, made it run, made it race against prime. Once I built a mortgage, now it's done. Brother, can you spell subprime? Once in sharkskin suits, gee, we looked swell. Full of that Yankee doodly don't. A half a million fools went into debt hell. I was the cat with the loan. Say, don't you remember they called me Alan, Hank, Larry, and Tim? Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Brother, can you spare a diamond? When citizens default, I triple lock my vault. But some of my homies are too big to fail. Supersize their bonus, on the poor I'll put the onus. Anything to keep my broker's ass out of that jail. Unprecedented failure of our national securities. We must discover who could be to blame. Could be Obama, Osama, or your mama. Heads we win, tails you lose. Main Street's cool, but Wall Street rules. Won't you purchase our paper? Please do, I insist. If you don't like it, buddy, well, default swap this. Paulson fit the battle at Goldman Sachs and Wall Street's tumbling down. If there's no remaining capital, what happens to our ism? I never thought I'd ever see the day when government has a role to play. But it's true, we're all set. We can wash away the debt and profit if not learn from our collapse. I love shooting craps. Housing bubbles, don't you whine, makes me happy like a landmine. Lehman was lynched merrily in the oh-so-stern bear market. Bail out the banks and offer thanks. Don't grouse. The economy's just lost one half of its worth, and you've only lost your house. Profits all gone. It was the era of the get. Now it's time for socialism of the debt. As for the paradox of deleveraging, which leads to alcoholic beveraging, the way to explain it to you nice, is that the selling of trash drives down prices. We need a clean plan, not just a mean plan. Why penalize the poor rich people who have lost more than you mortgage moochers ever could have? It's not like the sky is falling, though it's true your roof is gone. All is not lost, but as it says in the sonnet, doggone it, we're working on it. There's no shortage of reportage on our mortgage meltdown, so why not keep the next phase of the bailout on the down low? You'd never miss a million, and you cannot spell quazillion, so why not leave it up to those who caused it, those who lost it, those who reverse Santa Claus'd it, who believe in the American dream, especially the part about the Ponzi scheme. Nation of whiners gets no golden parachute. When we're through, you will be lucky if you've got a birthday suit. So what if we were all in a hypnotic trance, from which we awoke with the collapse of the tallest towers of finance? Well, Rome wasn't built in a day. I know I drove this country into a train wreck, but I feel a sudden need for a blank check. So please, won't you buy my... what's that Yiddish word I'm looking for? Track, not Shrek. Have no fear, we won't let it happen again this year.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. We're listening to Tom Ashbrook talk to Christopher Rowland and David K. Johnson. They're talking about how big corporations lobby for the big tax breaks. As Congress tightens the national budget belt, big corporations are getting monster tax breaks with the help of high-paid lobbyists.
Michigan Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow. Chris Rowland, how about it with Whirlpool, the story you've looked at most recently? Has it worked? Has it kept Whirlpool jobs in this country?
Well, that's a great juxtaposition of clips right there, because that shows how, you know, one man's tax break is another man's bread and butter, and how each of these tax breaks and credits has their own constituencies. The president's going after the tax breaks that he doesn't like, but then the Democrats, represented by Debbie Stabenow there, are, you know, defending the ones that they do like. And that sort of helps illustrate why these things continue to stay in, because no one's ready to make a move. Someone's ox is going to get gored. On your question on what happened with Whirlpool's tax credits, it's very interesting. I mean, they made the argument that this is going to save jobs, this is going to protect jobs, domestic manufacturing jobs. But when I looked at the record, I found that in Arkansas, in Fort Smith, Arkansas, in 2012, Whirlpool shut down a factory, laid off 800 people, and moved the refrigerator manufacturing jobs to Mexico. And when I talked to some of the union people there, they were very upset about this, and they thought that Congress totally made a mistake by making these tax credits available to Whirlpool based on basically, you know, representations that they were going to save jobs, but no real sense that there's going to be an accountability at the other end of it, that there's some sort of process where these things are reviewed for their effectiveness. And that does come to one other point of this, is that lobbying under the tax code is really efficient for companies. So it's much cheaper to hire lobbyists and go to Congress and get something slipped into a bill than it is to submit yourself to some, say, Department of Energy program where you have to come in and show what you've done and how many jobs is it protected and that sort of thing. So it's quite efficient for these companies to do this, and that's why they get such extraordinary rates of return.
And it's big money, even when they may not need it at all. I mean, looking at American oil companies, for example, tax breaks worth billions dating back to the 1920s, and they just keep coming. Looking at 2011, the three largest U.S. oil companies made a combined profit of more than $80 billion. And still, they're on this train. And it's interesting as well, Chris, how you've got corporate leaders complaining about our budget situation in this country. Back in December, Boeing's CEO, Jim McNerney, saying everybody's got to give a little to avert a fiscal crisis. But Boeing, which had a $9.7 billion in profit most recently, I think from 08 to 10, their tax rate was negative 1.8% on $9.7 billion in profit. So it's kind of crocodile tears from some of our corporate leaders who are not really chipping in, even when the profits are very large, Chris.
Absolutely. And that's another reason that, so there's been a lot of talk in Washington about we've got to do something about this corporate tax code. It's loaded with these loopholes. Big corporations are able to reduce their tax bills to nothing or even below zero, as in the case of Whirlpool as well. Boeing, GE, obviously very well known.
I mean, even Starbucks getting a break as a manufacturer for roasting coffee beans.
Right. And yet the thing is that, so if you did eliminate a lot of these loopholes, and then in exchange for reducing that corporate tax rate, right now it's 35%. A lot of people say it should be reduced to 25% to make it flatter and fairer, and then you know, broader, more people are going to be paying it. So many corporations would be paying much higher taxes under that. So you can see how their corporate tax lobbying would kick into a huge frenzy and would be extremely difficult to do. And that's really one of the big challenges that tax writers on both the House and the Senate right now are facing as they look at the corporate tax code and the really uphill battle of trying to reform it this year in 2013.
So tax reform, everybody talks about it, says we desperately need it. Bull Simpson recommended exactly this. Close the loopholes, drop the tax rate on American corporations from 35% to 25%. But you say if you close the loopholes, you could drop it by that big whack and they'd still be paying if they had to pay a lot more. No wondering the lobbying industry is so healthy in Washington. Chris Rowland, stand by. We've got a lot of listeners writing in here. What Takemoto says, corporate tax breaks can help corporations amass more money to buy political influence. What a nice, tidy circle. Dwight writes, they own the government and their people. Quoting Mitt Romney here, I guess, on corporations. What can we expect? We'd like to expect better. Delcy's calling from Milford, Connecticut. Delcy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Right now, the American public really is not aware of how their representatives are voting. And I think that every social network and every newspaper should carry a daily voting record of our representatives, as well as whom they're taking monies from. In that way, we will know whether they're representing the people who put them in office or the deep pockets who are paying them. The public needs to be educated before they can vote people out of office. And then and only then, perhaps, we will see a change.
Delcy, I appreciate your call. I mean, the problem is there's so much of this, it'd be almost a full-time job to keep up with it. But, Chris, what about the amount of transparency and how we might make all this clearer to voters?
Well, it is. It's a very interesting point because, you know, you can go and look at what your, you know, representatives voted and how they voted. And they voted in the Senate overwhelmingly in favor of the fiscal cliff bill, for example. It was much more controversial in the House, but not because of the tax extenders. But that sort of illustrates an interesting point that the lawmakers voted overwhelmingly in favor of extending middle class tax breaks permanently. That was the main feature of the fiscal cliff bill. So who's going to argue with that, that, you know, the middle class American, the average voter, is going to say this is a great thing, but then the tax extenders were tacked onto it. And so that's why that's another one of the features of these tax extenders and these tax credits and that sort of thing. They're always tacked on or amended on to other bills that are starting to move and that are popular and that are inevitable to be passed. So therefore, that when that lawmaker can say, well, yeah, I had to hold my nose and I didn't like those extenders in there, but hey, I voted for middle class tax cuts.
Well, that's all we heard about on New Year's morning, New Year's Day, when this deal was done. That's all people talked about. We didn't hear about tax extenders for, all these companies, were General Electric and Citigroup and Ford and Viacom and Sony and Time Warner and Walt Disney.
Exactly. Right. And so, but really, by doing that, you know, it's they're able to kind of mask what the, and as I said in the beginning, but that $67 billion was, you know, more than double the actual tax increases for the rich that were the big prize for the Obama administration.
It's all quiet.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome best-selling author Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know from the success of my new book, there's been tremendous speculation about whether I'll consider a run for the presidency. And as you also may know, there's one eensy-weensy problem.
Yeah, honey, I wouldn't say it was eensy.
And now, my time is here for Bill's career. I was the right spouse. My friends, one thing is clear. If I should hope to win the White House, my past is not my own. All hopes were blown in such a guy way. Still, it's not fair if I declare he'll be in my way.
Well, I did things I ought not to have done, and am I sorry? You bet, 'cause I got caught when I said things to that grand jury. Regrets I have a few, like leaving clues the DNA way. I stood tall, I did them all, don't care what they weigh.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know from reading my book, I've forgiven my husband for so many, many things. Well, I stood by him through the Paula Jones allegations. I stayed with him through the Jennifer Flowers affair, although I wanted to wring his neck. And even when he admitted to the Monica Lewinsky affair, still I didn't leave him.
Yeah, it's starting to look hopeless.
Now all that's done, sticking a fork.
I'm just the spouse of Miss New York. And if I cross my Hillary, she'll treat me like a dog, you see.
To keep him here, to save my career,
she'll see that.
James in Charleston, South Carolina. James, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Very well. What's your question, James? What do you see?
Well, I think part of the problem is the fact that most of the lobbyists are actually ex-Congress people or ex-Senate people, and so they pretty much are already in the know, and so it's almost like it ought to be, if you are in one of those positions, that you can't become a lobbyist, because basically our country's being sold down the road for money, and you know, it's a shame because, you know, the American people are pretty much going to be the ones that suffer. And only the rich are going to be the ones that are benefited by all this. And our country, little by little, is being pieced away. We're starting to become, I hate to say it, you know, where our country is not going to be the strongest it used to be. And we're just kind of falling down the tier of where our position was for years. And it's just a shame to see it happen. And we can't do anything about it because it's all being covered up so much.
Well, let's keep it right out in the open and stare at it, James. I appreciate your call. I mean, there is that cycle, Chris, and you and others report about the enormous growth in lobbying in Washington. Give us a sense of just how much bigger this has become as people realize that the tables, that the sort of payoffs here are gambler and gold miner scale. How has it grown, Chris?
Well, it's really grown a lot over the last 10 years. The number of companies that disclose lobbying on the tax code specifically has grown from around 1,200 to around 1,800 per year over the last decade. And one of the reasons is that the earmarks have started to fall off the table. The earmarks were embroiled in scandal. These are the special little budget items that lawmakers would get. So now the tax code is sort of serving as almost like a quasi-earmark system. So people can get special favors for their corporate constituents in their states by getting them into the tax code. So it's really spurring a big growth in the amount of tax lobbying. And one of the things, you can look at the numbers, and so tax lobbying on the budget has actually decreased while it's increased or stayed the same on tax lobbying. And the caller also brings up another great point. So who are these corporations hiring to carry their water on the Hill for them? They are lobbyists who were former staffers, former congressional staffers who worked for the Joint Committee on Taxation or the Senate Finance Committee or House Ways and Means, which are the major, very powerful tax writing committees, or also in Treasury, people who worked for the IRS division, top Treasury officials. These are the people that the corporations hire to then lobby their former colleagues on the Hill. It's the so-called revolving door that the caller put his finger exactly on.
I mean, it's not a fluke. It's a system. It's an established cycle. You work here, you go there, you lobby for them, they get what they want.
Right. There's a year cooling off period. So if you work for the Joint Committee on Taxation and you want to become a lobbyist, you leave, you take a year off where you you can just sort of advise clients privately. But then after a year, you're allowed to go up on the Hill and start making the case for corporate clients. And that's how it works. That's absolutely the system.
With us now from Rochester, New York, is Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist David K. Johnston, author of The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind, of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill, and many more. He's now a visiting lecturer at Syracuse University College of Law and Whitman School of Management, president of Investigative Reporters and Editors, columnist for TaxAnalysts.com. David K. Johnston, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thank you for having me on.
You've been writing and talking about these things for many years, but it's back in, I think, on our minds, certainly Chris Rowland writing about it, because it's still going on in the teeth of the fiscal crisis that we're facing in this country. Do American companies need these tax breaks to survive, to innovate, or is this, or is it a kind of just a siphon as we're trying to figure out our math, David?
Oh, Tom, it's worse than a siphon. It is a spigot. And this is a really sophisticated, excellent story that Chris Rowland has in the Boston Globe that I hope everybody listening to the show goes to your website and reads this. This is a really superb example of tax and public finance journalism. The companies that are getting these breaks are not mom-and-pop businesses. They aren't the Ashbrook family metal-bending business in Attleboro or the David K. Johnston, you know, hotel management company somewhere. Yeah. They are the very biggest, most profitable companies that own about 80% of the business assets. And this is simply a system to subsidize and help them and make it easier for them by taking money from everybody else. And it's terrible economics. It distorts the market. And because they're done on a two-year cycle, it is, for the lobbyists, a continuing stream of revenue. You have to keep going back to refresh the well.
Yeah.
And for the politicians, a continuing stream of revenue because they keep getting campaign contributions out of this.
So We hear all the time about tax reform. We heard a lot of it from Mitt Romney. We certainly hear it from President Obama, even the State of the Union address. But it makes it sound like everybody's so invested in this cycle that that's just not going to happen in any easy way, David.
Talk is cheap, and it's always easy for politicians to make promises. I see very little prospect that we will have any kind of actual tax reform in this country. There certainly is a drive to reduce taxes for the biggest corporations and provide them with benefits. But actual tax reform that involves leveling the playing field, I don't see any prospect of that going on right now.
But if you reduced corporate taxes and you didn't fix this loophole problem, that just turns – I mean, that really boggles the mind. Then they'd have lower taxes. What's going on with that?
That's exactly what's going on here is let's get a lower tax rate and at the same time, let's continue to get all of these favors targeted to specific industries around the country. I mean, there are industries out there, and the four big sports leagues and all of their teams are the prime example, who derive all of their profits from subsidies. If you took away the subsidies, they would not overall as an industry be profitable. There are specific companies I've identified in the past. You take away their subsidies, they would not be profitable. And the drive here is, it's very simple, Tom, as Chris Rowland's piece brilliantly points out, the return on investment from mining the public treasury with help from Congress is vastly greater than the profits you can earn from manufacturing products or providing services. So why worry about the products and services when you can make your real profits by mining the tax system? And we know since Enron that a number of companies internally refer to their tax department as a profit center.
But this is supposed to be a free market economy and country that builds strength from the competition of a free market.
Yes, well, if there's anything businessmen hate, it's competition, as Adam Smith taught us in 1776. And a lot of the reason that the tax code is so complicated, that there's so many regulatory rules, are companies getting regulations that insulate them from the market. In my new book, The Fine Print, I quote Morningstar, the investment advisory firm, as saying only invest in companies that have a moat. That means nobody can compete against them, nobody can get into the market against them, and therefore they can raise prices without regard to market conditions, and their profits are virtually guaranteed.
But they're not supposed to own our system. They're supposed to operate within it.
They're not even supposed to rent it, but that's what they're doing.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the giant tax breaks privileging so many American companies these days as the nation tightens its belt to deal with the deficit. And we're looking at the money politics that keep those tax breaks rolling. Chris Rowland has been writing about this for the Boston Globe. He's Washington Bureau Chief, joins us today from Washington. His big piece there, you can link to latest big piece at our website, onpointradio.org. It's pretty terrific. David K. Johnston is with us as well, Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist, been writing about all this for years. Currently columnist for taxanalysts.com, author of The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind, Free Lunch, Perfectly Legal, and much more. We'll talk a little later in the hour about what's going on in Cyprus there, where they're looking to ding people's bank accounts 6% to 10% to get bailed out. A lot of pushback on that, and Russian oligarchs not happy about it. But here we are. Chris, you quote Ed Kleinbard, who was formerly chief of staff at the Joint Committee on Taxation. He's now at the University of Southern California. And he says that with all these tax breaks kind of floating companies, you're quoting him here saying, what we're doing is running a Soviet-style five-year industrial plan for those industries that are clever enough in their lobbying to ask all of us to subsidize their business profits. These are perfect examples, he says, of Congress putting its thumb on the scale of the free market. And he says, I'll be damned if I know why I should be subsidizing Whirlpool. But surely Whirlpool says what? Do this or what? We're gone. We lose jobs. What, Chris?
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech. Free speech! Yeah.
Free speech. abridging the freedom of press or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances.
Free speech, free press, free people.
More from Great Speeches and Interviews after these messages.